ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः Okay. We're embarking here on a long discussion on the relationship between consciousness and the self, the Atma and consciousness. From a Vedantic perspective, consciousness is the Atma. Atma is consciousness. But from different schools of thought, like Nyaya, Vaisheshika, they would see it, and so even I think maybe in some schools of Mimamsa, I'm not sure about that, but certainly Nyaya Vaisheshika, which this argument is dealing with, they're looking at consciousness as being an attribute of the Atma. Why can't, they're saying, why can't it be an attribute of the Atma, you know, or of the Jiva? But it's actually between the Atma and consciousness. So you'll see as this debate unfolds. And you know, in the whole Purva Paksha Siddhanta, when we're doing a bhasha, the first part of the bhasha is always just going to do the vigraha of all of the words, give the word meanings, make you understand what the verse actually means. And then it will bring in the Purva Paksha Siddhanta. So, for instance, if another school, like a Buddhist, the Bauda, or Sankhya, or Nyaya, Vaisheshika, any of the major schools, Mimamsa, might look at this differently. If they can see an argument that one of these schools might bring in, then they will bring it in as what's called the Purva Paksha. You know, and that's where you'll get these nanu, you know. And so often the nanu is, the Tao is going to one of these schools. So actually really, to be able to understand a lot of these bhashas, you have to be familiar with all of the different schools because that's their context. Okay, so here it's Nyaya Vaisheshika. Swamiji also mentioned something about the Mimamsa, but so let's go to the Astu Tarahi where we left off. Okay. Everybody there? Mm-hmm. So repeat after me. Astu Tarahi. Chid-dharma purushaha.
Chid-dharma purushaha.
Katamayam chit-svabhava.
Katamayam chit-svabhava.
Iti. Na dharma-dharmi-bhavasya.
Dharma-dharmi-bhavasya.
Anupakattehe. Let me read it again with the sandhi and just explain a couple things. Astu. Tarahi, chit dharma. Dharma, the word dharman, dharma is the nominative accusative, a nominative masculine singular, and it's going to be in relationship to purushaha. So chit dharma, compound there. And then katam ayam, chit swabhavaha, visarga drops, right? Before the sarga, followed by soft consonant, or a plus visarga, followed by any vowel except a, visarga drops. Any vowel except a, visarga drops. Okay. Then na, dharma, dharmi, bhavasya, anupakattehe. Okay for everybody? So actually, this is an objection. Not all objections start with nanu, just a... Astu, let it be. Tarahi, astu tarahi, then let it be. What let what be? Chid dharma purushaha. The quality for dharma here, the quality, the attribute. So dharma doesn't always just mean dharma, right, in terms of... Punya Papa, moral behavior, also means attribute or quality. So, for the Purusha, let it have the Dharma of consciousness. So, Bahuvrahi, right? The Purushaha, whose Dharma? For whom the Dharma is consciousness. In English, we'd just say, You know, let the Purusha, let the Atma, have for its Dharma consciousness, have consciousness as an attribute. Do everybody see that? Kakam ayam chit swabhavaha iti. You say, how is it, kakam, how, ayam, does this, Purusha, chit swabhavaha, have its swabhava, consciousness, as its swabhava, as its nature. Let it just be an attribute. Let chit just be an attribute of the Purusha. When it says katam, why, in English we'd say, why does it have to be the swabhava of the Purusha? Why does chit have to be the swabhava, the very nature of the Purusha? Why can't it be a dharma? So it's an error between Purusha and chit, which we'll see Purusha and chit, consciousness. We'll see Purusha, what they're referring to here, the Atma. No, it can't be like that. So you can see kind of the terseness, just no.
No exclamation points in Sanskrit.
Yeah. No commas either, in fact. This,
yeah, I see
right,
the comma.
That's, I told you all right that I'm just copying directly from this text. So they tried to put in punctuation. So I went ahead and put it in. Whatever they put in. So now it says, no. Dharma dharmi bhavasya anupapattehe. Now, you see the compound ending in the genitive, bhavasya. And from anupapatti, anupapattehe is fifth case. It's going to be because, right? Anupapatti means, usually we translate it as untenable. Something which is not tenable, which is not possible. But in terms of logic, untenable is a good word. So we say anupapattehe, because of the untenability of a dharma dharmi bhava. Or is it go the other way? Dharma dharmi bhava. Here bhava, when you say dharma dharmi bhava, the bhava means that just a relation. The relationship of substantive attribute, where the dharma is the attribute, the dharmi is the one who has the attribute. So see, just in Sanskrit, if you take dharma, and say the word, how we're translating that, is attribute. Dharmi comes from dharmin. That dharmin, that in affix, shows possession. So you'd say the dharma, dharmi, the dharma is the attribute, the dharmi is the one who has the attribute. So often we'll translate that as the attribute and the substantive. Because the substantive is a word that we use for the thing that has the attribute. Okay? So dharma, dharmi, bhava, that relationship, that bhava, that state of being, in English we'd say that dharma, dharmi, bhava, there's untenability of that, right? And that's why we use the genitive. Okay? Because of the untenability of a dharma, dharmi, bhava, of a substantive attribute relationship. Okay? Tathahi, now, these little words, I'm always trying to get an exact translation of them from somebody, but there is no translation. In a way, you have to understand the spirit of it. He often means because. Tata means in that manner. So here, if we look at it as an explanation of now the Siddhanti coming in and saying, no, it can't be that way because of the impossibility of the substantive attribute relationship. Tata hi. Because when it's like that, if that were to be the case, right? Say if you look at tata in when it's in that manner or in this manner, then tata, because in this manner, how would you say that in English? Because when it's like this, because if it were to be like that.
Tata,
right?
Doesn't mean and?
Tata.
Tata.
It usually isn't used as and, though it can be. It's usually used correlatively with yata, tata. Yata just as, tata similarly in that manner or by itself like that. Tata hi though, if you're looking at it as a continuation, it would translate well, I think, as because when like that, if like that, right? Then he says, so repeat this. Tata hi. Atmanas chaitanyam.
Atmanas
chaitanyam. Bhinnam. Abhinnam va. Bhinna bhinnam va. So Sandy, Atmanaha Chaitanya, Chaitanyam, Atmanaha Chaitanyam, Bhinnam Abhinnam va, Bhinna Abhinnam va. Last one's a Dvandva compound that keeps the singular. Okay, so Atmanaha, fifth case. Chaitanyam Bhinnam, consciousness is different from the Atma. So we would say, we would introduce this as a question here, because this question is what's going to be discussed. Okay? So you also, you don't have to have Uppi or Kim introducing a question. The question can just be by intonation. Right? So you would say, is the Chaitanya consciousness Bhinnam separate or different from the self? Atmanaha, from the self, Chaitanyam consciousness, Bhinnam. Is consciousness different or separate from the self? Abhinnam va, or not separate from the self, not different from the self. Everything's going back to the Atmanaha, the Chaitanyam. From Atman, fifth case, right? Or sixth case, but here, fifth case. Bhinnam abhinnam va, or separate and non-separate. So you have to decide what word you want to use, separate or different. I ended up using separate, but it means separate or different. It comes from the root bid, divided, cut. Yeah, so separate from.
Or, so what in here is it? How do we know this is a question?
Just because when you say tatahi, if that's the case, you have these three. Which one is it going to be? Now he's going to go through and say, well, it can't be different, right? And he uses each one as an argument. So.
And what's the third one?
Different and non, both different and non-different.
Both different and non-different.
Right. Problem. Okay. but you know, the Nyaya Vaisheshika, they have some problems, which I'll try to discuss with you. I kept some notes in the handout. You'll see Chatterjee and Dutta have kind of, that's a book that I used to teach with actually at CIIS. And he has some nice notes on these different type of relations. So I just put it in there. Okay, now let's look at this. Tetra na tavid binnam. Oh, well, let me finish one thing. So not abhinnam va, not different. Bhinnam cha, abhinnam cha, dvandva compound. And some dvandvas can be, compounds can be kept in the singular, some have to be in the dual. Like for instance, sukha dukkha can be kept in the singular, because they're a real set. You know, they belong together, so they can be kept. And there's a whole group of ones that can be kept in the singular. But when you break it up, it would be like here, bhinnam, abhinnam cha, bhinna, abhinnam. It's called a dvandva type of compound. So, that's this. So, he had three options here. And now he's going to have to discuss these three options. Right? Because, see, you have to keep in mind the situation. If you say that the consciousness is an attribute of the Atma, then there's some sort of dharma-dharmi bhava there. If you say that, attribute-substantive relationship is there then. What is that relationship? What is the relationship now between these two, consciousness and the Atma? Are they different from each other? Are they two reals which are different than each other? Or are they not different? Are they not separate from each other? Or what is this relationship? So if you're going to say, if you're going to put forward this type of relation, then we have to see what kind of relationship that could be. So here he says, so repeat after me, Tetrina Tavad Bhinnam. Bhinnam chet gatavad atma dharmatva anupapattehe. Gatavad atma dharmatva anupapattehe. I'll just break it up a little bit. Gatavad atma dharmatva anupapattehe. Okay. Tetra there. There is referring back to what has been said. So in reference to that, regarding that. Na tavat binyam. Here tavat. Tavat has many different translations. Sometimes it's being used as a correlative with tavat yavat. Here it is not. If it's tavat yavat, it would mean as long as this, so long as this is so, then for that length of time this is so. That's the yavat-tavat relationship. When it's used by itself, it has different meanings. And one here can mean certainly or indeed or obviously. So I use certainly here. There, it certainly is not binyam. It certainly can't be separate, right? As something other. If you say if it's binyam, it means it's something other. You have consciousness here and atma here. They're two separate things that have somehow come together. And so he says, they certainly can't be binyam. Binyam chait, if binyam, if separate. So it just says, certainly here, in reference to this, na binyam. Binyam chait, if binyam, if chait for if different, or if separate, gatavad, like a pot, atma-dharmatva anupapattehe, because of the untenability of it being a dharma, an attribute of the self, like a pot. So what he's saying there, using the pot example, if it is considered a real object, a real thing, which is different from this real thing, the atma, and consciousness is a real thing which is different from it, then there is no relationship to it. This is just the first stage of the argument. There's no relationship between the two. Just like there's no relationship that you would have with a pot or a chair or something that's completely different from you. What relationship is there? So he's just saying consciousness then just becomes like something completely different from you, like a chair is completely different. That's the idea. Now when we say gatavad, remember that vad in the vat, gatavat, atmadharmatva anupattehe. Vat means like. If it's used as an indeclinable, it'll be like. So it's often used when we want to give a adrishtanta or an example of something. So gatavat, like a pot. Atmadharmatva, being a dharma, being a quality of the atma, like a pot. Just as it's in pot, it would be totally untenable to say that the pot is a dharma of the atma, because it's completely different. If you say that the self, that the consciousness is completely different, then in the same way, it's totally untenable to say that it's a dharma of the, an attribute of consciousness, of the atma. You with me? That if you say, just as it's totally untenable to say that a pot is a quality of the atma, right? Because it's totally different. It's binna. In the same way, it would be untenable to say that consciousness is an attribute of the atma. If you're saying that the consciousness is binnam, then it's just like a pot. It's just something out there that's different. Okay. Now the objector comes back in. He doesn't accept this. So, read after me. Nanu, gataha, asambandhat, atma dharmo na bhavati. Chaitanyam tu, atma sambanditi, yuktam, atma-dharmatvam ityapi na sambandha anupapattehe. I'll read it for the Sunday broken. Nanu ghataha asambandhat atma-dharmaha na bhavati chaitanyam tu atma-sambandhi iti yuktam atma dharmatvam iti api na sambandha anupapattehe. Okay for everybody? Mm-hmm. Nanu doubt. Gataha, the pot, nominative singular, a pot, asambandha, asambandhat, fifth case, because of being not being connected. Sambandha, asambandha means a connection, an association, a type of association or connection. It's just a general word for connection or association. So because of not, because of there being asambandha, no connection, atma dharmaha na bhavati, it is not an attribute of the self. Because basic sentence, gataha atma dharmaha na. That's your basic sentence, right? Gataha atma dharmaha na bhavati. Why? Asambandhat. So the doubt is a pot is not an attribute of the self because it isn't connected. It has no connection. The a negates the sambandha. Really clear? Chaitanyam tu, whereas tu, whereas or but, whereas chaitanya, consciousness, atma sambandhi iti yuktam. Okay? Say the atma sambandhi iti yuktam atma dharmatvam. The first part we would take like this. The chaitanyam, being an attribute of the self, atma dharmatvam. But whereas chaitanyam, nominative singular, atma dharmatvam, nominative singular, so the chaitanyam, the tvam, being an attribute of the atma, yuktam, is proper. In what form? Atma sambandhi iti. It is connected. It is an atma sambandhi, right? It is connected to the atma. Atma sambandhi chaitanyam. So atma sambandhi iti yuktam. That's how it's proper. Yuktam means proper. So the atma, the chaitanya being a dharma of the atma is proper. Atma sambandhi, in that it is connected to the atma.
Yeah.
Unlike a pot, right?
Yeah.
Iti, then, now here comes the siddhanti. Thus, this also, this iti puts this whole argument in quotes, right? If you were to say this, he's putting the whole objection into quotes and says, thus, this also, we would say, no. This objection, api, also. See how the iti puts the whole objection into quotes? And then it says, api, also. So this whole objection, also, no. Sambandha, why? Sambandha anupapattehe. Because of the untenability of a connection. There can't be a connection. The whole idea of there being a connection between Atma and consciousness is not tenable. This is the Siddhanta, the Vedanta coming in. And so now he has to prove that. He can't just say that. He has to, especially to the Nyayas who absolutely believe in all of these things as being different entities. Is everybody clear on the Sanskrit there?
Mm-hmm.
The anupapattehe is in the fifth case.
This is hard.
Well, this argument is a little hard because it's not within our own sampradaya, you know. And so you have to even make any sense at all, you have to kind of understand the thinking of the Nyaya or the Vaisheshika.
It's hard to take it seriously if the explanation being given at first is to say, oh, you can't have, consciousness can't be an attribute of the Atma because that would make it external like a pot. You know, that's not really...
Well, the thing is, you have to think more like this. If you were to study Nyaya, or you have somebody come into your class who thinks like a Vaisheshika person, Vaisheshika, you know, or Nyaya, Nyayaika. They think like that. They have those questions. And they also see, if you were to understand these philosophies, they are pluralists, you know, and they break the whole creation. The whole creation is built out of paramanus, which are the smallest substances, then in a complex manner, will will unite with each other, forming given categories that are considered reals, things that are actually realities, right? And so even their understanding of different types of connections or sambandhas, it's the understanding of real things coming together with real things. And so he's talking to this Nyayayika, who's viewing all of these things, these categories and objects, as real entities. So it's not the Atma is one real entity, consciousness is another real entity, and even the sambandhas that we see, they also are real entities. They're real categories that exist within the creation. So they have a different way of looking at it.
No, I was actually saying the opposite. I was saying that the Vedantin is not giving a very clear explanation by saying the logic to say the reason that, you know, consciousness cannot be an attribute of the Atma is because that would make them separate. You know, it's like heat is an attribute of fire, but heat is not separate from the fire, and heat is not sitting out there.
Well,
so,
that's,
you know,
because
I mean, those are easily kind of broken logics being offered by the Vedantin, it seems.
I'll tell you what your problem is. We're reading in slow motion,
and so
you're not letting.
Okay.
We're stopping on one sentence.
But also, it seems like there's no definition of Atma. I mean, it seems from this nobody has a definition almost.
Again, if you go back to the verse. You've got to go back to the verse. And there is a real definition here of the Atma.
Uh-huh.
Right? The definition is Nitya Upalabdhi Swarupa Aham Atma. Right? You see, the Atma is consciousness. It's very Swarupa. It's very Swabhava. Last line. I am that Atma. Aham Atma. I am that Atma whose Swarupa, which is the Swabhava,
uh-huh,
is Upalabdhi, consciousness, which is nitya, eternal. And then this whole verse, and not only that, it's ekam, from the verse, it's ekam, it's one, means advaita, nishkampam, it doesn't move or change in any way, so it's free from change. It's agni ushnabat nitya bodhisvarupam, he uses again the word nitya bodhisvarupam, like the heat of fire, like heat is to fire. This is consciousness. It's very Swarupa. It's very Swarupa. So we have to remember this. This Vasha is a commentary. Is a commentary of the verse.
Right.
And so he's bringing in these different Purvapakshis to attack the verse. You know, the veracity of the verse.
He must have won.
Oh.
In the game. Is that a winner?
No, it doesn't sound like him.
No.
And so, if you remember, last 2 weeks ago, the whole discussion was on how could you use the word Bodha in the word, he uses the word Bodha in the first line, how could you use the word Bodha? Bodha means a cognition. So he's gone through this whole thing to show that no, Bodha here means Chaitanyam,
mm-hmm,
not a cognition.
Right.
And then instead, now he's attacking the Purvapakshi is saying, yeah, okay, well, you're also saying it's the Swabhava, it's the Swarupa.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you saying it's the Swabhava, the Swarupa of the Atma? Why don't you say it's a Dharma, an attribute?
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going through, and he knows, which you all don't know, until you do know, right, that this is a Nyayayika, or Vaisheshika. The Nyaya Vaisheshika have basically the same philosophy. And so we're looking at this as a Nyayayika, or Vaisheshika person, bringing in these objections.
So what do they think the Atma is? They think it's like a collection of
The Atma is one of the things.
Hmm.
Yeah. The self is one of the things.
So this guy's just being quarrelsome.
No, he's not.
The self is one of the things?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Consciousness is its own reality. There are more than one reality. The self is its own reality. I have it on the tip of my tongue to give you a Vaisheshika.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think what what they think the self, I mean, because like the normal ignorance is you think you're a body, mind, sense, or this person. So
no, see, that's why, you know, maybe I should tell you something a little bit more about
it. Should we just skim over this, or what do we want to do?
Well, I mean, it depends on how deep you want to go. If you want to go too deep, I have to prepare on a different level. In terms of Nyaya Vaisheshika.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I don't want to know about
that. No, no, no. No, they're legitimate questions, right? Listen. The Nyaya Vaisheshika adopt a realistic view of the self. According to them, the self is a unique substance to which all cognitions, feelings, and connotations belong as its attributes. Okay? Desire, aversion, and volition, pleasure, pain, and cognition are all qualities of the soul. So remember when he said the Bodha? Mm-hmm. Why can't Bodha be a cognition? That's how we use this word Bodha. It's a cognition, right? These cannot belong to the physical substances since they are not physical qualities perceived by external senses. Hence, we must admit that they are the peculiar properties of some substance other than and different from all physical substances. There are different selves in different bodies because their experiences do not overlap, but are kept distinct. The self is indestructible and eternal. It is infinite or ubiquitous since it is not limited by time and space. The body or the senses cannot be the self because consciousness cannot be the attribute of the material body or the senses. The body is by itself unconscious and unintelligent. The senses cannot explain functions like imagination, memory, ideation, which are independent of the external senses. The manas too cannot take the place of the self. If the manas be the Nyaya Vaisheshika, be as the Nyaya Vaisheshika hold, an atomic and therefore imperceptible substance, doing okay? The qualities of pleasure, pain, etc., which should belong to the manas, must be equally imperceptible, but pleasure and pain are experienced or perceived by us. Nor can the self be identified with a series of cognitions as in Tao philosophy, for then memory becomes inexplicable. No member or a series of cognitions can, like a bead of the rosary, know what has preceded it, or will succeed it. That's their attack on the Buddhists. The Advaita Vedantin's idea of the self as eternal self-shining consciousness is no more acceptable to the Nyayayika than that of the Buddhists. There is no such thing as pure consciousness unrelated to some subject and object. Consciousness cannot subsist without a certain locus. Hence the self is not consciousness as such, but a substance having consciousness as its attribute. Okay? Mm-hmm. The self is not mere consciousness or knowledge, but a knower, an ego, or the I, and also an enjoyer, or bhokta. So all of this is going to be, he's going to be
negating.
Yeah. Right? But, you know, the way to think about this, like you're, we get into just a Vedantic mindset, right?
Yeah.
Right, and so you don't think of these other possibilities, but actually, if you think of it, these, what we call darshanas, all of the darshanas, are ways that people think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So every mind that comes to you is going to fit in or have similarities to one of the darshanas. You know?
Yeah, this is all, it sounds completely like, you know, the Vedantins deal so beautifully with the buddhi, the manas, the, you know, and this is just like buddhi is self.
Well, say you come and you think that this world that you experience is the reality. And I am the knower, the enjoyer, and I'm a conscious being with the attributes of knowership and enjoyership. So they work all of this out just based upon the pramanas that you have available to you, right? And so they come up with a system like that. Even though they accept the Nyaya Vaisheshikas, they do accept the Vedas. But they come up with their system through logic, you know? So that being the case, I mean, how many people, like say, if are what we would call like charvakas, or charvakas just say, this is it, what I perceive through my sense perception, this is the reality. Mm-hmm. With the Nyaya Vaisheshikas, they at least accept a more subtle reality. There's a conscious self, there's a mind which is has different attributes than can be attributed to what is physical. Mm-hmm. And so they go a little bit, you would say, deeper. But they still look at every part of their experience as one, as a reality. So they divide up and categorize the realities of experience. Right? Where we look at everything, there's one reality, there's the Atman, everything else is Maya. And, right? And everything that we experience within duality comes into that category of Maya. But to have a category of Maya, you have to accept non-duality. Or there is no category Maya. But what if you don't accept non-duality? If you don't accept non-duality, then this is real. Our experiences are real. So how are you going to categorize these real experiences? So they categorize the real experiences and bring them into relationship one with the other. So here, what they're doing is bringing the consciousness into relationship with the Atma, which itself doesn't have consciousness, but it has to be a substance, you know, which enjoys consciousness as an attribute.
So it can be there without consciousness present, from this point of view.
I think at death, I think that there's something like that. But as I say, I'll tell you, I teach this class. It's called Eastern Theories of Self, Mind, and Nature. I teach Nyaya in Vaisheshika. And I teach the Bauda classical. I have to reread it every single time that I teach it and rememorize it. Because it doesn't go along with my logic.
Right.
And so that's the problem.
Is it really hard to fit into and turn to Sankhya?
Sankhya is different.
That has Purusha and then Prakriti. And then everything coming from the Prakriti side.
That's right. Now, okay, if we look at the darshanas, the six darshanas that accept the Vedas, because we have Charvaka, which are materialists, they don't accept the Vedas. We have the Bauddha, the Buddhists that don't accept the Vedas as a pramana, as an authority. The Jains don't accept the Vedas. So these are other darshanas that we're not initially dealing with. In the Brahma Sutras, we will deal with them, but if we say just when we use the term Shad darshanas, which mean the six darshanas. We have Nyaya and Vaisheshika, which go together. They go together because even though they're different, they have basically the same philosophy. And Nyaya, the Nyaya school, provides the logic. And all of the different schools rely on Nyaya for its logic, even though they differ in some of it. Nyaya's mastery is in logic. But they keep the same categories that we call the padarthas, the reals, the things that are real, as the Vaisheshika. So you usually study them together. You know, you study Nyaya and Vaisheshika together and say Nyaya and the Vaisheshika, they keep the same 16 padarthas, but the Vaisheshikas cram all of those into 7, and the Nyaya keeps the 16 as separate, but they deal with all of them. Mm-hmm. Okay, so those are the realities. There's those two. Then there's Sankhya Yoga. Those two go together. The Sankhya, both accept, the yoga accepts the philosophy of the Sankhya with some minor difference. And the Sankhya accepts the yoga as a means for realizing the truth of what the Sankhya has to say. So that's right. Now, the Sankhya, they are also dual, right? For the Sankhya, you have the Prakriti, which is dual and real. The Prakriti is a real. And the Purushas, there's a relationship between the Sankhya and the Purusha. The Purushas are many. They're all exactly the same. All limitless consciousness, all pure limitless consciousness, but there are an infinite number of them, which also is logically weak, right? But that's what they say. My consciousness is I'm a bubble of infinite consciousness, pure infinite consciousness. So are you, so are you, so are you. So they have some arguments for that, which none of the other schools accept. But the Prakriti, which is like our Maya, except it's real, the unfoldment of the Prakriti, you know, from Prakriti, etc., Rajas and Tamas, it unfolds as the five elements, etc. So there's a whole process of unfoldment that is very similar to the Panchikaranam in the Vedanta, right? And so because of the nature of the Purusha being pure consciousness, and the prakriti following its the unfoldment of maya. For the Vedantic standpoint, it will spend a lot of time negating the prakriti, negating the validity of Sankhya. Because Vedanta also uses the term purusha and prakriti, right? And Bhagavad Gita uses purusha and prakriti. But prakriti is a synonym for maya.
Right.
Right? That's the difference. In Sankhya, it's not a synonym there. It's not maya.
Right.
It is itself
so
real.
Eternally separate.
Absolutely
separate. In Sankhya.
Yes.
Right.
The purushas are dual.
They never know.
That's right. And there are many of them. And the prakriti is dual because sattva, rajas, tamas, they're all, it's dual within itself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one entity with many, many parts.
Mm-hmm. And they share the same level of reality, in a sense, purusha and prakriti? I mean, they're equally
yes.
real?
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. They're equally real. Mm-hmm. So Sankhya Yoga share this darshana, the philosophical opinions of this darshana, they share. So we have Nyaya Vaisheshika, then these, right? Sankhya and Yoga. And then Mimamsa and Vedanta. What is similar about Mimamsa and Vedanta is that both are totally based on the Vedas. The Vedas themselves are their authority and also their prakriya, the whole teaching methodology. So the Advaita Vedanta is the Upanishads. The Mimamsa looks at just the creation. And its philosophy is very different. The philosophy is very different than the Upanishads. They don't accept Advaita, anything like that. They think everything, they don't even really accept Ishvara. They accept karma and ritual. But why they come together, Vedanta and Mimamsa, is because for they're so tied to the scripture. Whereas all of the other four are not tied to the Vedas. They accept the Vedas as authority. But they also believe that they can come to the truth through their own, the truth of existence, the reality, through logic. And that logic, what they come up with, is not, does it go against the Vedas? And so now all of these darshanas are arguing one with the others.
Well, like you said, most people, a lot of people think that way.
Yeah, so how it's very useful to us to study all of the different darshanas, you know, and we include the what we call the Gnosticas, the ones that don't accept the Vedas. Why it's so helpful to study all of that? It's because this is the way people think. They're Purva Paccha Siddhanta, so you don't have to say, if a student is unfolding something to me, I don't say, oh, you know, that's just what the Nyayayaka said. You don't have to say that. You've already gone through all of these different types of analysis.
You know, now you can introduce a new one, which is that people think that Advaita is a happy state of mind. I've run into this continually, where people feel it's a state of mind that they need to maintain. When they're in that state of mind, they're in a non-dual space.
And
yeah,
but this, but see, this is a is, it's not Vedanta. It's been superimposed on Vedanta,
yeah.
But it is much more in line with Sankhya Yoga.
Why is that?
Because the emphasis is so much put on meditation, and if you think of it, when Sankhya Yoga, all the components of the jiva are prakriti, the mind, the buddhi. Any type of meditative experience is all prakriti. So you're trying to actually bring the prakriti into a state of quiescence.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. That's what I did when I was a surfer.
So there's this superimposition. And also for them, the Atma, the Purusha, is free from suffering. It's not a positive state. They accuse the Vedantins of looking at, as looking at the experience of happiness as belonging to the self, which they don't understand Vedanta at all. They think that the experience of happiness and sorrow belongs to the prakriti, right? To the manas, to the mind, the buddhi. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that the atma is neutral and free from sorrow. So they make this type of distinction, but that's...
That sounds right.
Easy.
Okay.
It is right. Mm. But what they say that the Atmas, that the Vedantins say, is that the self is a bliss state. They look at the self as being ananda. They don't understand the difference between Swarupananda and Vrittiananda.
Yeah.
And so now, for the Vedantins who have been influenced by yoga, they also think that the Atma is a bliss state, which they only relate to their state of mind, which they gain through meditation.
Yeah.
So this is all...
the most common thing.
Yeah, it's the most common.
Yeah. It's really nice to know now where it's coming. You know, the history of it, that there's something backing them up, in a sense. It's wrong, but it's where they're
It's muddled. It's a lot of things being muddled together.
Yeah.
And it goes on from there. Then there's all... it goes on from there.
This is very useful, though, to
understand it.
Between.
There's also not an understanding. There's even in Vedanta, there's what we call, in the Brahma Sutras, one commentary called the Ratnaprabha commentary, which is right in line with Shankara that we follow. There's also Bhamati, which is another commentary on the Brahma Sutras. Bhamati was a householder. He has been interpreted as saying that you are listening to Vedanta, the Vedanta is being unfolded, and then you more or less go to meditate to realize it.
Okay? Yeah.
This also plays in to the problem. Right? And this is not necessarily what Bhamati said, this is how Bhamati has been interpreted. So then Vedanta becomes, I'm giving you now a lecture on Vedanta, now you go and meditate to realize it. So now we're also looking at an experience,
right?
So that Bhamati being understood in that way, plus the yoga, Sankhya yoga, and the lack for us as Westerners, the lack of this teaching existing in the West following the Sampradaya. It is not like Buddhism and other teachings which have had a chance to mature. In a sense, I don't know enough about Buddhism to see how much it's been hurt, or I have no idea.
Distorted
or whatever. But that's another thing. You can also bring in Buddhism gets superimposed on all of this. You know, and the misunderstanding of Buddhism also by a lot of people. I'm not talking about the Buddhist teachers at all. I'm talking about how it's been popularly misunderstood. Where Shunyata is translated, instead of emptiness, it's translated as non-existence.
Right? Nothingness.
Nothingness.
Yeah.
That's a huge problem.
Yeah.
And the difference between existence, between emptiness and non-existence is something that's even in Buddhist literature is contested. Right? If you take non-existence and then you say this what we call anatmavada, Anatmavada means there is the no self for the Buddhists. We all think of no self. But then they don't understand what no self means in terms of shunyata or emptiness. Because what they are doing is using the word self in the way that a lay person uses the word self. And there is no such self. This body is made of many parts. There's no self here in the body. The mind is continually changing. There's no self there. It's just one cognition after another. So, actually, in everything that you take to be the self is not the self. That becomes their anatmavada. But then they have no pramana, no means of knowledge, or no teaching. Their teaching methodology does not include the use of the pramana of the Upanishads to reveal, having negated everything, the self-evident nature of the self.
Well, that's the most important part.
But since they don't have or don't make use of that methodology, they go through whatever teaching methodology they go through to make you realize nirvana. The nirvana is like Brahman. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the world that has this shunyata, and then what happens is that you understand, this is from Nagarjuna, you understand the shunyata, emptiness, in terms of maya means it has no substantial reality. Brahman, they don't use the word Brahman, but nirvana, that reality, indescribable reality that you can't talk about or touch in any way. That is shunyata. Also means what? Free of form. Shunyata, mitya, right? Creation is free of substance, of essence. Shunyata, nirvana, is free of name and form. And so what the person has to do is through the different practices, which include meditative practices, but also dharma, you know, a lifestyle, is to come to the full recognition of the mityatva of the creation that includes everything of the jiva, and then have an awakening in reference to the shunyata of what is there that they will not call the self. What we will call the self, because we say that is the self, is all that is. This self, kind of conscious being that you are, is what they arrive at in terms of shunyata and don't call the self. What we do is we remove the ahankara from the anatma and put it on the atma. They say this is anatma, and you need to recognize that nirvana. Right? And so this Buddhism is much better known. All of these words, terminologies, books, Buddhist groups are all over the place.
Popular.
Very popular. So this is understood. Yoga, or Sankhya Yoga, has some understanding. The Bhamati version of Vedanta. So you get this mix of parts that are substantiating everything, each other, to looking for the experience of ananda. You see?
Yeah.
Wow. So it's